Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticultural consultant and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty.
Hi, Phil.
Hi there, Kate. Welcome to another series
of
The Underground.
Series number 3.
I know, and this year has just absolutely flown by, but it's been tremendous.
Oh my goodness, and of course the big highlight for us this year was Glee Special.
It really was, and 23 interviews over 3 days was going some.
And we're still going, Phil.
We are.
But what an amazing experience that was. We met so many incredible people, talked to just so many wonderful, wonderful people, whether they were gardeners, product suppliers, manufacturers, influencers.
Yeah, and we've had tremendous, tremendous feedback from our listeners. So thank you to everybody who's been listening, whether you've been just tuning in to the odd episode that you cherry picked, or whether you're a dedicated every week listener.
Big up the dedication.
Yeah, thank you so much, because without you, this podcast really wouldn't be existing. So,
but also, thank you to all the people who have been listening, who have then got in touch and said, actually, can we come and talk to you on the podcast as well? Because without guests, we have no podcast.
This is very true.
And we've got some really interesting guests and some topics coming up this season, haven't we, Phil?
We have. What we've done this season is we've broken things into little subsections for the season. So we've got a little series on the built environment.
So we're kind of talking about new homes and the difficulties that a lot of the new builds can give to people with a new garden.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah. We're talking to various people about that. We're going to be talking to some garden centres, which I think will be really interesting.
We've got a few influencers coming on to have a chat with us, haven't we?
That's right. And we're also talking to, like we've been doing, people who are actually manufacturing products for the garden care sector. So,
and of course, we're still going to be talking about peat-free and the transition from peat to peat-free.
Exactly. And we've got a special coming up.
We have indeed.
So that's going to be really exciting. We've finally got round to putting that together.
So keep an eye out for that special on peat-free.
Yeah. So what are we going to be discussing today, Kate?
Well, Phil, as you know, Grow Your Own has been a massive movement in the UK, and it kind of exploded during lockdown. Yeah. And people are still, growing their own food. And what we want to kind of look at and pick at is how can people who make garden care products and garden centres, how they can help really with that movement, and what are the opportunities there, would you say?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And so we're going to be looking at sort of new products, what people could be doing, maybe where they should be focusing their attention, that sort of thing.
Yeah, because it was a really difficult year this year for anybody taking up Grow Your Own, because we had such awful weather. I lost all my tomatoes with tomato blight, and I'm a very experienced vegetable grower. Yeah. Also, I think there is this perception that if you grow your own, you've got an allotment or you've got loads and loads of space in your garden. But actually, a lot of people are growing in containers, growing in small urban spaces. Yeah. So we want to kind of give people as much help and give kind of the garden care sector the opportunity to kind of tell us how they can help the home gardener as well. But today, I'm really excited because we're going to be talking to a couple of people. So would you like to introduce our first guest, Phil?
Absolutely. I'm delighted to be welcoming onto the show Aid Sellers, the Good Life Gardener, who left his job working in television and moved from London to rural Suffolk to live the good life.
Hello. Well, thank you. This is lovely. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Aid, you say you gave it all up. You moved to Suffolk. Why? What motivated you to leave all that kind of glamorous city life behind and embrace the good life?
I mean, gardening's always been in the background. Gardening is always something I was brought up with. My dad was a great gardener, and so he, I learned him. But living in, as I was saying, I lived in London for 20 odd years, so I was always renting. And when you're renting and you love gardening, you can't really commit to the garden because it's not your garden. And I didn't want to make that sort of investment. So I quickly learned, is very of the moment is, you know, urban gardening is, you know, you garden with makeshift raised beds, the wooden pallet's your best friend, growing rhubarb out of those, you know, those mobile dustbin, you know, bins, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was always there. And over the years, what happened was the gardening passion came more and more, and the TV career became less and less, because I found the creativity was being sucked out what I was doing television wise by the guys in suits were coming in, and they were all more about the shareholders and, you know, that kind of thing. And they weren't on about, you know, the creative project. They weren't interested. They just wanted. And so my creativity just went into gardening. And because of that, it just all of a sudden erupted. And I kind of thought, why am I not doing this? Why, you know, what's stopping me? And like I said, it was, you know, my wife had a very successful career in film, and she wanted to get out, and she, you know, she's a great writer, and that's what she wanted to do. And in 2016, we were shortlisted for Vlog of the Year, because we used to go under a banner called Agents of Field. That was our blog name. And we naively went to this posh hotel, the Savoy in London, one sort of November. Yeah, the Garden Media Guild Awards, and the pudding came out, and it was toffee pudding, and I got stuck into the pudding. And at that moment, we were announced as the winners. And I had to collect my award off Anne-Marie Powell with a mouthful of sticky toffee pudding. So that was a memory I have, and that was the thought. I was like, I want to get into gardening. So with a mouthful of sticky toffee pudding and an award under my arm, that was it.
How could you not?
Yeah. So, yeah, it sort of went from there. That really did start the wheels moving. And by 2018, we said goodbye to the city and hello to, you know, the rural life. Gosh,
that's fantastic. Brilliant. That is brilliant. I'm going to go a bit X factor on you. Lovely. And I'm going to use the J word. I'm going to use the journey word. So was there something or someone that has kind of influenced your garden journey?
Yeah.
You talked about your dad being a gardener.
Yeah, my dad, heavily my dad, and obviously my wife. I mean, I know it's like, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy and trying to get, you know, into my wife's good books, as it were. But honestly, from day one.
She won't be listening to this.
No, she won't be listening. Quick, turn it down. Shh. but from day one, you know, when I started getting into the gardening, you know, it was because of her. We bought this little terraced house back in 2009, and it was an absolute wreck. And it was a long, narrow north-facing garden. And 6 months later, she got a job in a film abroad for 4 months, and she was the gardener. She was the gardener.
Right.
And she gave me the seeds. She gave me the tomato plants my dad grew and said, don't kill anything. And she was gone for 4 months. And there's so much DIY a man can do. So I would go out into the garden, and the garden was pretty much a dumping ground. And so from May until she came back in September, those 4 months, I basically reworked that garden, created three different types of garden, a sunken garden, beds, borders, flowers. So when she came back, she didn't recognize the garden. Don't get me wrong, there was mistakes in there. But again, that's all part of the animal. Yeah, you've got to do it.
Of course.
The following year, we got into Alice Fowler. She had a TV program. And she's
from Bristol.
And she has a garden.
Birmingham. Sorry.
And she had a garden very similar to ours. And what she was doing, she was growing flowers and vegetables together. And I was going, yeah, I've heard about this. And my wife said, do it. And we did it, and we had successes and that. And then I was like, oh, I'm outgrowing the garden. My wife said, get an allotment. I did it. Brilliant. School of learning. Wasn't enough. Passion was growing. Pandora's box had been opening. My wife suggested, why not get your RHS qualifications? So I did. I went off and got my RHS qualifications. Then we started tinkering with the whole move into rural, you know, giving up the good, you know, giving up the city life for the good life. Again, it was, you know, so for my wife. So it's a long-winded story, but what I'm trying to say is she's been the absolute backbone behind this. She's the one who came up with the idea for Agents of Field. She's the one that kind of thought, you know, I grow the veg, she cooks with it, she comes up with some fantastic recipes. So It is so, you know, and even, even today, I'm working on things. When I'm doing like the short films down the garden path, that was Sophie's 100% there, and she's the one that's advising or making suggestions or pushing me to go, maybe you should do this. So long-winded story, but.
So is she involved in the actual gardening, or is that all you now, or is she very much part of that?
Well, like I said, she was the gardener. She was the gardener. She comes up with gardening ideas, like the wildlife pond I built 2 years ago. That originally was the dumping ground. We were renovating this house, and there was like an old toilet out there, plasterboard. And then she had the idea, well, let's turn it into a wildlife area. Better still, let's put a wildlife pond in it. And so she comes up with these really good ideas. We live in the countryside, and we have this big drive. So suggested take it out and plant it up, bring in bring in pollinators. We did that. Sophie makes suggestions about how the kitchen garden, what to grow. So I'd say she's management, and I'm the grunt worker. I say that with love.
Of course.
Yeah. But actively, she doesn't garden. She does go out and she does a lot of harvesting, because she's always creating lots of wonderful recipes. She loves cooking, so she's always trying something. Oh, so so there you go.
So Aid, how does your past experience as like an actor and TV producer shape the way you approach your gardening, content creation and presenting and all the things that you do now?
Never say no to a job and always blag. How about that? presenting wise, I always try and go at it with, whether it's a garden talk, early this year where we all met up at Gardeners World Live, and I was very lucky I got to host the Urban Gardening Stage. For me, it's all about giving people a good time and not bamboozling them with Latin or people sometimes get caught up and I shouldn't make a mistake in gardening. I have to do it this way. No, you don't. Make those mistakes. The book says this. RHS says this. No. And I stand by this, and I always say this any of my gardening talks, is a bit of garden anarchy is a good thing, because
it's the Rick Dale coming out.
You shouldn't be afraid to make mistakes, because that's how you learn. And sometimes that's how you get great discoveries, because technically what you grow in your garden, sometimes you shouldn't be able to because of sunlight or microclimate. But for some reason, plants ignore that and grow and bud and flower. And you think, oh, well, I can do that. And it's that learning curve and that journey. So when I sort of deal with audiences, I want them to be relaxed and happy and not afraid to ask questions, because there are no silly questions. So it's my job, whether I'm presenting or giving a garden talk, is to be open and welcoming and never, I do use humor quite a lot, but if there's a gag on a person, I'm always the fool guy, because I don't like to pick on individuals and, that kind of, so I'm happy to make a fool of myself. It doesn't bother me. And and it's just, if people are relaxed, and then people will engage more. And I think humor, and I don't mean humor as in I'm here to make you laugh, just that kind of, oh, it's going to be all right. And if I can get that that feeling all around, it just makes things a lot easier for people to enjoy and not be afraid to ask.
Would you say your background has helped you in the art of storytelling as well? Because I know, with the other things you do and also presenting, there's an art to it. Has that helped, do you think?
100%. It's like anything, whatever career you're in, whether it's gardening, whether you're an accountant, you have to go through that school of learning to find out who you are. And then when you learn those traits, those skills, they're your foundation, and they give you the confidence then to push you forward and challenge yourself and go, I can do that now, or I'm not sure, but I've got to give it a go. And it's that self-reliance. I think that's what I'm sort of driving at. You learn how to stand on your own 2 feet and just go, you're only coming around once, let's go for it.
So how important would you say storytelling and authentic communication is then for brands within the garden sector? So not you per se, but, you know, so talking about other companies maybe in within the sector.
When I see stuff that doesn't ring true, I try and keep an open mind. You've got to keep an open mind because every story is different.
Yeah,
but what rings my bell is someone who comes into, you know, the gardening world or pops up on social media and they've got a story to tell and it's very real and it's authentic. Because I think then people can relate to it more. I know sometimes people or brands have to play a certain game because they're selling a product, and sometimes, you know, they might pull on the heartstrings or they might try. And I get that, and that's fine. But me personally, it's, you know, you have to be real. So you have to be who you are 100% because there's only one of you. And, you know, I find that more interesting to know about the real you than the 10 clones that are giving off an image that you might see in a magazine or on social media somewhere. So
do you do any collaborations with brands, with companies? Because obviously we're an industry podcast rather than a how to garden podcast. So just kind of interested on that level.
I don't. I really don't. I do one company, a peep tree company. And the reason for that is because when I had my allotment back in London, I was very much into single digging. This is a long story and I'm sorry, but I'll get to it. I was very much into single digging, double digging, all that kind of stuff. And I'll be honest, my allotment wasn't peat free. So when I came out to rural Suffolk and I was building my kitchen garden, one of my hit lists, my target was I wanted a peat free garden. And I wanted to have raised beds. And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do this 100% because everyone's talking about peat free. And the only way you're going to find out is do it yourself. So I got in touch with a peat free company. And from the off, they provided me with a compost to fill my raised
beds. Great.
And, you know, see how I got on with it and blah, blah, blah. And I do writing work for them. And 5-6 years on, I'm still using that product. So, and we have a very good working relationship. So, peat free, yay. And brands, I don't really work with very many because when they do approach me, I'm probably not. I always go, right, who you are, what do you stand for, who do you represent? So I'm probably not the most friendly person, you know. But that's who I am. Because, I know sometimes it's easy to take the freebie or take the paycheck and. And that's lovely for a lot of people, but I have to ask questions. You have to ask questions. If you don't ask,
definitely, especially now.
Yeah, you get roped into something. You think, oh no, what have I done?
Yeah, and it'll come back to bite you as well, won't it? Come back to bite you at some point.
Yeah, and so if anyone's ever got a question for me related to gardening, I like to think I can give them 100% honest answer. And,
honest.
You know, which is sometimes why some brands that have approached me, I've gone, thank you, but no, thank you. It's not what I'm about.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Would you say the more that you've got into gardening, the more your perspective on the environment and sustainability has changed over the time?
Yeah. I mean, yes, 100%. And also I'm lucky because I am married to someone who's very environmentally aware. And from day one of us living together, you know, even simple things like, that goes in the recycle bin, that goes, you know, there. We can use that again. You know, we can, you know. So again, so from day one is very good at that kind of thing. But I know since living out in, you know, the countryside, I've always been aware of nature and, you know, natural beauty. And I, you know, but there's something when you, you know, living out here for 6 years now, all of a sudden your senses, what you're attuned to is slightly differ. So mm-hmm. You know, you can be gardening for a client and then all of a sudden you hear something and you just stop in the track. You know, you just stop dead and you sort and you pick it up and it could be a bird or it could be a squirrel, but you appreciate that moment a lot more than running around on the underground, getting into London and all that kind of, because from there you're going from A to B and you just head down, headphones on, in the phone, whatever. But out here, what I've learned to do, and I'm not perfect, but I've learned just to be in the moment. And that's something else I sort of talk about is being in the moment, you know, appreciate what you've got, who you're sharing it with, and whether you're, you know, in a flower bed with a robin or whether you're eating fresh veg that your wife's prepared and the lovely meal with, whatever. It's just, you know, it can be small. It's just appreciating all those moments. And that's something I've really learned to do in the last 6 years since I've been out here. So, you know, even sat in your kitchen garden and you're just daydreaming. And you have to, you know, daydreaming is a good thing. I think sometimes it's frowned upon, especially, you know, when kids, you say, don't daydream, get on with it. But I think you need to daydream a bit.
Yeah.
Because when you daydream, your mind wanders. And when your mind wanders, that's where you get your best ideas. And you're more aware of your surroundings and you take it all in.
Yeah. So you said that, you know, your attitudes changed when you moved to Suffolk.
Yeah.
Not everyone can move to Suffolk. No. So those people who are still in, you know, in inner cities, what can they do to achieve the same, that same sense that you're talking about there, do you think?
I made a decision, and I do talk about this, is when I moved out here, I made a decision that every day, and I always try to, you know, I will stop. It could be 30 seconds, it could be a minute, however long, just to stop, just to breathe, just to take a moment of my surroundings. And I wish I'd done that with the 20 years I lived in London, because by the time the end of those 20 years came to an end, the grey matter was absolutely frazzled. Mentally, I wasn't in a particularly good place. You know, I was burnt out. But I know if I just, and I know it's difficult because people are travelling into work, people, you know, London especially can be a bit aggressive, people nudging, but it's just finding that 30 seconds or that moment where you can drown out the world and tune into the world that is there. There's wildlife in the city, there's birds singing, it's learning how to find it. It's just finding those 30 seconds just for yourself, just to breathe, just to take it all in, whether, you know, it's a bench on a park, whether you're at a bus stop, or, you know, whether you have to sit outside in the garden by your workplace before you go in, just to reset yourself. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but it's just, you know, putting another bit of armor on yourself, you know, having that moment to reset yourself and go, right, now I'm ready for the day. And I wished I learned that a lot sooner, because I find that really does help. Because I still work in London. I still go down to London to do the presenting and whatnot. So I still have to tackle the hordes and all that kind of thing. Not as frequently as I used to, but. Now, there is moments where I think, oh, God, here we go. So just, yeah.
Do you think that garden centres and plant nurseries, you know, how can they help with this kind of educating new growers, getting more people to grow fruit and veg and be more sustainable? Do you have anything to do with kind of garden centres yourself at all?
I mean, I've done bits and bobs, but it is such... I mean, I know, you know, especially since COVID, businesses have really felt it. They've really felt it, you know.
Yeah.
Any business, you know, they've really struggled. So, and now they've come back and they're trying to, you know, make ends meet. And whether independent businesses or nurseries, they're up against these big corporations. But they've got to, you know, if they want to keep themselves in the fold on the market, they're trying to find ways of doing it. And I think it's that realization, it might be an obvious one, is not everyone has 3 acres of land. Not everyone has time to garden 7 days a week. And I think people, you know, because of all that, people then go, oh, gardening's not for me. I'm not a gardener. And I always say, whether you garden 7 days a week or one weekend every 6 months, you're still a gardener and you're doing something positive, and that's important. So it, with that in mind, I think, you know, not that I know about, you know, garden nursery business, but it's like tapping into these people. It's tapping into people that have patios, have, you know, rented accommodation, have only like one weekend a month to do a bit of gardening because the kids are with grandma that weekend or whatever. And it's finding those niches because they're the real gardeners. You know, they're the people that are trying to juggle life and juggle something they love. And sometimes I think that gets forgotten, you know, because we read the glossy magazines and we watch the glossy programs and we, you know, we go online and we see, you know, the world of gardening. And I don't think sometimes it's fairly represented. But I think there's a whole world of gardeners yet to be tapped into. And I think these gardeners are the real gardeners. And I think it's important that they get represented. And I think they can help gardening business. And I think the gardening business, by tapping into them, can, you know, it can work both ways. They can help each other.
One of the things that both Phil and I have found really inspirational has been your mini series of Down the Garden Path. I want to say Through the Garden Gate. Down the Garden Path.
I'll take Through the Garden Gate. I don't mind. I'm not fussy.
I mean, those are beautiful stories that, you know, they're lovely. I mean, beautifully filmed, obviously, but they're emotionally engaging, really heartfelt. You've got some beautiful contributors as well. And you're up for another GMG award as well, aren't you, for this as well? Can you tell us a bit about this lovely project?
Yeah, the original idea about it was, selfishly, it was me wanting to do a passion project, if you like. You know, it was just that kind of... taking what I, two things I love is gardening and filmmaking. And I thought, I want to do something and I want to show something to, if there's anyone out there who wants to watch it, that, you know, there's a whole world of gardeners that have come into the industry from different angles. And again, going back to what I was saying earlier, there's not one direct route. People come at it from all different angles. And I wanted it to be a film, a series of films that make people feel good. I also wanted them to have interesting stories, and also, it's a two-hander. So within these films, it's the gardener and the space they garden. So it's kind of like a pull-up. And I didn't want to interfere when I was filming them. I didn't want it to interfere. So when you hear them narrating, it's just a conversation that we've had off camera, and I've just pressed record and we've just talked. And so it's all very natural, and that's what the style of the films are. I wanted to keep them very natural. Just like I was saying, you know, just breathe. It's just like 4 minutes of fresh air, 4 minutes of relaxation, 4 minutes of people going, I'm inspired. I want to meet this person. I want to learn more about this person. I didn't know you could garden like this. I didn't know you could grow that. And all these things were kind of the framework of what I've been trying to do.
I think you succeeded. I absolutely love them. I think they're brilliant pieces. Each one, you know, I've absolutely loved watching them.
From a selfish point of view, I get to have a good old nose around in their gardens.
Totally, yeah.
So have you got any upcoming sort of events or projects that you're working on that you're particularly excited about?
Oh, there's been a few things. I mean, I've written a book. A kid's book. It's like a fiction book, and it's set on an allotment, and that's a little bit of interest. But that's been on the back burner for a while. It's only recently it's now sort of come to light. And then I do a lot of work with
Lee. So has that actually been published yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Fingers crossed, as it were. Again, I'm quite fussy. And I do a lot of work with Lee Connolly, and we've got a few projects, a few irons in the fire. And he keeps saying to me, you know, write your gardening book. And I'm like, well, you know, my gardening book is not going to be like the standard, you know, this is how you grow carrots. You know, it's going to be humor and you know, stories and... Yeah. You know, really bad Rick Mail impressions and all that kind of stuff. there's a few things. And I know I want to do more filming next year. I want to get out. I've got a few ideas what I'm filming-wise. But I think this is, for gardeners like yourself and myself, this time of year, we're kind of in planning phase, aren't we? We're starting to look ahead to 2025. And it's all about trying to get the bookies and trying to get interest and all those sort of things. And I think there's a lot of us trying to do that at the moment. So we just got to go for it, haven't we?
So we've got a few sort of more light-hearted questions for you. If your garden had a personality, what sort of character would it be? Would it be laid back or more of a perfectionist?
I've called my garden he. I do this a lot with plants. He, she, I do a lot of that. I do work for Barbara Segal, and she's always saying to me, oh, it's a she now, isn't it? Oh, so the kitchen garden is a he. When we first started, he was very uptight, very prim and proper. Over the years, he's kind of readdressed himself. He's now more relaxed. You know, he's probably had a bit of a wacky backy. He's a bit more chilled. You know, he's enjoying life a bit more. He's been on the scrumpy cider. he's enjoying country life. I would say that.
That's nice. Although I must admit, I went to see the Rewilding film from the Knepp Estate, Wilding. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've seen that. The Knepp Estate in Sussex is near where my dad lives, and it was just the most beautiful film. If you get a chance to see it, and that is about, you know, letting nature take over and letting go of control. It was so beautiful. It really, really was. So I recommend getting to see that, and you'd love both of you would love the cinematography of that film. Absolutely wow. Beautiful. Anyway, I think that's sorry, thing, took over there.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing with gardening is learning to let go. That's another lesson learning. Sometimes you have to let go, because nature always will. Mother Nature always finds a way, and sometimes she's doing it, she's doing it for a reason. So you just got to step back and let,
absolutely.
Whether you're trying to bring in pollinators, biodiversity, all that kind of thing.
So do you have a guilty pleasure crop to grow? You know, just something for you that you love, that you want to eat, you know, not that your wife likes to cook, but.
Do you know what? It's really boring. Well, it's not boring because gardening isn't boring, but I always grow. Okay, when I had the allotment, I would grow everything and too much, and I would never say no. And if I went to a gardening event and they gave me a packet of seeds, I had to grow it. And there's only two of us in the cat, so there's only so much I could grow. So I used to go into television with a box of vegetables and give it away, you know, to people and clients. But what I've learned, having a kitchen garden, you have to rationalize. It's a lot smaller. So what you grow...
Right.
You know you're going to use, or you know you can store it, or, you know, so you've got to be a bit, for me, I've got to be a bit more forward planning and ensure that everything I sow as much as possible will germinate, because I have no backups. I don't have another crop growing in another part of the allotment, because kitchen garden is what the kitchen garden is. So I kind of, the first couple of years, I was very streamlined with my kitchen garden growing. But like anything, you put in more raised beds, you put in more hanging baskets, you put in more containers where you find the spaces. And so the veg family, as it were, I've kind of broken out a bit. And now we have all sorts of weird and wonderful, you know, I have trombocinos up the side of the shed, strawberries in every hanging basket possible. Because I think that's what I challenge myself is, if there's a space, what can I grow in that space? And if I can't grow out, I grow up. If I can't grow up, I'll hang on something. And that's what the kitchen garden's taught me. So it's not so much trying to grow the weirdest and rarest vegetables. It's more about how much can I successfully grow in a space.
Excellent. So for me, I've always struggled with growing cauliflower. It's been my absolute... It's a nightmare. Do you have a plant that you've always struggled to grow that you would really want to grow?
I don't want to say it sounds really hardly. It's not because I'm trying to be big headed. I'm not trying to be Monty Don. I can grow everything. That's not why. But there were some vegetables like Romanesco. Okay, so Romanesco was something I loved, and in my allotment, I didn't have much success with it. But my kitchen garden, it's like weeds. Romanesco loves the kitchen garden, and have to grow it every year. I have to grow because I love that vegetable so much, not just to eat, but to look at. I think it's a beautiful vegetable. Yeah. There's some things.
That's the green called pointy cauliflower, is that right?
Yeah, and it has that kind of spiral indentation that runs through it.
The one that I can't grow.
I'm sorry. Am I rubbing salt into the wounds a bit here?
Just rub it in.
Yeah. So it's, for me, it's more about vegetables that I thought I couldn't grow that I now can grow and I must grow. Because I love it so much.
Yeah. Aid, if you could go back to your city living self, what one piece of gardening advice would you give yourself?
One piece. Patience. Because living that life, I mean, for 20 odd years and going from an actor to working behind the camera and in that television environment, it was pretty much go, go, go. And what you don't realize is, I don't know if damage is too strong, but the effect it has on you after 20 years, and you you get so tightly wound up and everything has to be now. Everything, whether you're gardening, whether it's your day-to-day life, whether you've booked a table somewhere, you know, you've got to be there on time, you've got to be this. And it's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. And gardening has kind of given me that kind of breathe, have a bit of patience. You know, being out here for 6 years, it has reset those sort of boundaries a bit, and it's kind of torn down the walls, as it were. Mm-hmm. So I know when we left London, October 2018, I was probably like this. 6 years on, I'm like, ah. So yeah, I think patience. And don't get me wrong, you know, it's not perfect. It's not a picture postcard. There are days where, like any, you know, whatever lifestyle you lead, there's up and down days. Yeah. But
yeah,
all I can say is, you know, 6 years on, it's making me smile.
Well, I think that probably wraps us up.
Thanks so much, Aid. We really appreciate you coming on. It's been fascinating talking to you and hearing all about the work you're doing and your perspective on not just gardening, but life in general, I think. So thanks, Aid. It's been wonderful.
Thank you both. And it's lovely, you know, get to know you both a bit more, because we met briefly earlier this year and we have a little bit of social media banter. But it's just nice to talk to people and find that we have the same sort of struggles sometimes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, Phil, our next guest on the podcast is the lovely David Hinckley. And David Hinckley has been growing his own food for a long, long, long time. And what he's done, he's put together this amazing internet resource called Grow Mad, which is a website which has absolutely everything anybody needs to know and wants to know about growing your own.
What was the inspiration then behind you starting Grow Mad? And, you know, did you see a gap in the garden sector for that, or what?
I think the gap was, first of all, it was dedicated to my father as a kind of a repayment.
Okay.
Everything that I've learnt or enjoyed from growing your own has been passed down from him.
Right.
The gap for Grow Mad was quite simply the fact that there are many, many good books on the bookshelves, and there are many, many good websites available.
Yeah.
Big frustration was I just couldn't gather everything that I was looking for from one site. So right. I thought it would be nice to almost corporate swipe something from all of the books from all of the websites without any type of plagiarism, and try and put it into one site as a starting point, and then develop and build on it from there after we knew what people were looking for.
Have you seen an increasing trend among people moving towards self-sustained living? And how would you say Grow Mad can cater to this new audience?
There's definitely a move towards better living in general, particularly after COVID. There was a huge surge in people thinking, I can't even buy basic food in the supermarket. I'll grow my own. Right. Now, that's easier said than done. You can't just go out, get a packet of seed, get yourself an allotment. It's incredibly difficult. So we are trying to provide guidance. We don't charge. There's no subscription.
Brilliant.
And bizarrely enough, we don't sell anything. We offer much. We act as a portal, so you can come to Grow Mad. You can take as little or as much as you want. Everything is available. The food security is also becoming an issue. There's more and more of the UK farmland being taken up for house building. The Pesticide Action Network will clearly demonstrate that there are so many pesticides and other chemicals going on to commercially produced fruit and veg. It's actually quite frightening when you look at the list.
Yeah.
Things like grapes and strawberries, cherries, even spinach, things that are every day in everyday people's everyday baskets from the supermarket, are covered in all sorts of nasties. And people are becoming aware of this. If you grow your own, you know exactly what has gone on to it. And I think one of the biggest problems is for most people, particularly younger people, there's just a lack of education. So we are trying desperately to offer education on producing your own if you want to take it. So it's there. If you need it, we're there for guidance.
Amazing. Can I ask though, David, what do you get out of this? Obviously, you're putting a lot of work into it. Are you just doing it out of the goodness of your heart, or do you get sponsorship? Are companies helping you out with this?
Well, because it's only just recently launched, it's actually been 8 years in the building.
Right.
But I registered the domain in 2008, so you can see it will soon be 20 years in the making.
Right.
At the moment, it has been a work of love because I'm trying to give back. We ultimately will be looking for sponsorship from companies where we can help them, where we can advertise their products.
Yeah.
But we are offering everything that we actually are trying to give for free. It's free today, free tomorrow, free forever. But ultimately, we would like to be taking on sponsorship. Right. And money isn't the main aim. I have a day job. Grow Mad is about trying to give back and to educate.
Wonderful. So do you have any formal gardening training at Grow Mad, or is it more of a community-driven knowledge base?
Well, it's kind of both. So we are trying to build a community within the website. We are going to be offering what we call Grow Mad Field Days, which are in effect workshops where people can come for the entire day. We would plan on splitting them into small groups, so it's more of an intimate education. So one group would look at polytunnel production, one group would look at fruit production, one group would look at raised beds, one group would look at soil science and composting. And then the groups move around so that by the end of the day, you've had a taste, a flavour of everything that we're trying to offer. And the rest of the information is really going to be made available on the website. We also will be doing, well, we are doing gardening talks to horticultural societies, gardening clubs, anyone that will listen to us.
So GrowMad actually offers a wealth of resources for home gardeners.
Yeah.
What aspects of gardening do you find people are most commonly seeking help on?
There doesn't really tend to be any one specific area.
Right.
It tends to be a lot depends on age. So if it's a young couple, they perhaps got their first allotment, they need a bit of everything. They need cultural information. They need to know where to buy seeds. They're looking for products, which we would hope to be able to offer through the website, obviously, and articles and videos. Whereas if you're an older grower, you're probably not interested necessarily in some of the more up-to-date modern techniques, for instance, perhaps no-dig. Although it's been around for decades, centuries probably, they're not interested. They would rather just be sticking with the old traditional ways.
Right. So how do you decide on the types of guides and resources that you develop then, David? Are you influenced by the feedback from your Grow Mad community?
Yes, definitely. I also spend quite a lot of time visiting allotments, again, trying to promote the website. So I talk to quite a lot of people face-to-face. Mm-hmm. Also, I try to look at things that are personal to me. So as we go throughout the year, if I have a particular issue with something myself, then I'm assuming that I'm not on my own.
Yep.
So then I would perhaps try and put an article out or put a video out. For instance, seed companies don't promote very well the fact that there's quite a few items that can be sown in the autumn. They just don't. So I promoted that on a YouTube video because there's so much that can be done mainly in October, to save time in the spring. You would be surprised that you could have a whole list of plant types all ready to plant out in February and March that are all good to go.
Right.
But it's just not very well promoted.
So you have lots of extensive resources. So with that, do you see, I mean, we've talked a bit about, well, you're hoping to get some sponsorship from a seed company. Do you see other opportunities for collaboration with retailers and other garden industry stakeholders?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. Absolutely. The key, one of the key parts to Grow Mad is the product directory. Within the product directory, there is 180 categories. And that's just the categories. Within each category, there are lists of suppliers. Right. Each page is made up of a left-hand menu, which has every supplier that we can find. Within the middle of the page, there are some picture ads that we're clearly looking for sponsorship. Yeah. But we have tried to include everything that a gardener would need, from seeds to greenhouses to tools. There's even a portal there for how to get an allotment in the first place. Right. But we would love collaborations with product manufacturers, big and small.
Yeah.
It's the potential opportunity, isn't it? That's there, David. Yeah. So, David, if one of our listeners wants to get in touch with you, wants to get involved, how do they go about that? How do they get in touch with you?
They could come to you and ask. They could come to the website. We have a contact page. We have an email, which is hello@growmad.co.uk. They can visit our social media. I think if they email me, you'll find that it's got my personal mobile number on there. Anyone that wants to seriously talk to me will find me.
I would urge anybody who's thinking this, well, this sounds quite good, go and have a look at the site, because it is really good.
So much, such a good resource.
Thank you.
So, David, for brands looking to engage with the home gardener, what type of content or resources have you found resonates most with your community?
Again, it's very, I think, age-based. Okay. If you are an older garden, somebody that's retired, and I've spoken to these types of people, they still like to buy the magazines. They still like to buy the gardening press. Yep. They're quite happy to read a visual article. Mm-hmm. However, someone in their late teens, early 20s, 30s, it's all about YouTube, TikTok. They haven't got time for anything. Nobody wants to read a 15,000 at that age. They don't want to read a 15,000 word article. They want to watch a 2.5 minute video maximum.
Right.
But I think the things like organic and no dig, we need to really look at the best ways of getting that information out, because at the moment it is so topical and so important.
Yeah.
What can garden centres and plant nurseries, or maybe even product manufacturers, be doing to better serve that community, do you think?
I would think probably one of the main things that's lacking at the moment is education. I don't think they're doing enough to assist people. I think manufacturers, as well as educate, they need to talk to people on the ground. They need to talk to people that are using the items, or people like ourselves at Grow Mad, where we are sitting in the middle. We're sitting between the manufacturer and between the end user. We could give a lot of guidance to people, but in most cases they're not prepared to ask.
Interesting. So, David, Grow Mad's got this great community. It's a building community that you're creating. If it had a motto for that community, what do you think that motto would be, do you think?
I think for all gardeners out there, I would have to think of something from Churchill, and it would be never, never, never give up. It's not going to be as easy as you think. It isn't.
Yeah.
But if you persevere, everyone is going to have disasters. They are. But if you persevere and manufacturers and suppliers try and educate a bit more, it will work. It will. The same as I'm trying to build a website for the user, and I'm not looking to take very much from it, certainly not from the user, but we will win. We just will not give up. We shall just keep battling and we will break through.
Yeah, wonderful. So is there a gardening myth that you'd like to set straight for any new gardeners out there?
There are lots of myths. I mean, there are myths like you shouldn't water your hanging baskets if the sun's shining. I mean, there's lots of myths, and complete honesty, that's a rubbish one. I would say the biggest myth is people think it's easy, and garden centres dress it up to look easy. The biggest myth is it isn't. But if you persevere, if you're educated, it is definitely, definitely doable. It is.
Yeah. Okay. As in, yeah, when we were speaking to Aid Sellers, as we said earlier, one of the things he talked about was patience. He said gardening is taught in patience.
Yep.
And, you know, in this culture of everything is now, is instant. I think that's, you know, what you said as well about, you know, you've just got to wait and you'll learn. It's about learning, waiting, patience.
I think I've got a lot of time for Aid, and I think that's absolutely, it is. Patience is absolutely up there, definitely.
Wonderful. Thank you. So just to finish off, David, have you ever tried growing something completely different, something a little bit wacky that you might see on Instagram? And if you did, how did it go?
I think it's not very adventurous, but I think the most bizarre thing probably is planting a vineyard.
Yeah.
I'd say that's quite adventurous.
we discovered quite by accident that we're actually on perfect wine growing soil. Soil. It's basically champagne soil. So rather than try to produce the champagne grapes, which are being done in quite a big way in this country already.
Yes, very successfully.
Yeah, we thought, well, we'll try something a little bit different. So we're not going to produce sparkling wine at this stage. We're going to settle for probably white and rosé. So that's probably the wackiest thing we've done. But they're 3 years minimum before the first harvest.
Right.
So we thought, well, we're growers. We'll work it out. And we've got 3 years to be thinking about it.
Brilliant.
Well, we'll be looking forward to watching the progress of your vineyard.
I shall certainly keep you updated.
Well, listen, David, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today on The Underground. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and find out more about Grow Mad and the community that you're creating there. And wish you all the best for success for the future.
And hope to see you soon.
Yeah, thank you, Kate. Thank you, Phil. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from The Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at writeobara.com.